She never ate the ice cream. I don't know why it was important for her to tell me that, but it was the first thing Mother always mentioned about growing up. She worked in the fanciest ice cream parlor in town and got to meet just about everyone. And even today, she points out people and says, "He's a chocolate pecan and she's strawberry. That marriage won't last." Gravity was not a friend to my mother. By the age of 15, she had fallen out of 8 windows, a church, and the hat display at Macy's. While some suspected that her convalescence provided her with the attention and sympathy she craved, she told me later that it was the act itself which drew her to it, the feeling of weightlessness, falling in a world without rules or boundaries, almost infinite. On her nights off, she'd go over to Ruby's, across the street, so she could listen to the jazz. The sound of a tenor sax still brings tears to my mother's eyes. She says it's the sound of the impossible, come to visit this world for a while, though it never stays for long. It's everything we hope for, but never reach. "And what if we reach it one day?" I asked. She said, "Then it's not jazz." She met my father when she was 21. She says, "I wasn't ambitious. I married the first man who came along." "That was your father." He was the most distracted man she'd ever met. In order to get his attention, she kept having to push her face into his, and because he was taller than she was, this meant spending whole evenings on the tips of her toes. This wreaked havoc with their two-step and absolutely destroyed their tango. She claimed she never found him handsome, even at the beginning. She would spend whole evenings in his arms, dreaming of others' faces, the tattooed boy who packed her groceries, the mailman who always looked depressed, as if he'd stayed up all night reading the letters he had to deliver the next day. But my father was the first to ask her to marry, and because she couldn't think of a single reason why she shouldn't, she said yes. They were married in June, in a simple ceremony with a few close friends attending. Marriage was her first intimation that only the conventional could provide her with true happiness. It was only when she felt her own desires, so small and insignificant, connected to everyone else, that she felt the mysterious presence of what some would later call God. My father was always coming up with new ideas to make us rich quickly. My mother encouraged him in this, although his schemes invariably backfired. Hoping to regain the beautiful, curly hair of his youth, he invented the hair seed, which would grow like plants on everyone's scalp. Each day we watched as my father's remaining hair dropped out, but he was never discouraged for long. He decided his hair had been the problem, a barrier between his ideas and the light that all ideas traveled on. Although my sister was a year older than me, she insisted on sharing the bed. She took her bottle at the same time and slept the same hours. Before long, I couldn't tell us apart. I didn't know where I stopped and she began. I had become her satellite, orbiting the strong magnetic pull of her personality. Determined to make our childhood as normal as possible, my mother patterned our behavior after popular movies of the day. Because everyone seemed so happy on screen, we were encouraged to learn certain scenes by heart, rehearsing them over and over until we got them right. Here we are rehearsing a birthday party from an Andy Hardy movie called Kid Town. From early on in my life, I had a great difficulty telling right from wrong, but I had become such a good mimic. No one could tell the difference. I know many of my friends were as confused as I was. We thought morality was something that happened later in life, like pubic hair or mustaches. My favorite days at school were when Officer Bromley came to visit. He told us interesting stories about the kinds of tools you need to break into a car or how to wear a disguise. Sometimes, after class, he would invite one of us to ride along with him in his patrol car, although mostly he would just park it behind the electric plant and get us to show him how we were developing, down under, as he liked to call it. When I was 15, I discovered sex, although not in the usual way. It wasn't feet I was interested in. Even that seemed too personal, but people's shoes. Each weekend, I would go to the racetrack and prowl the back of the stands, looking for a particularly good pair. My favorite were brown Oxfords with dark trim, although penny loafers ran a close second. My parents showed affection to each other so rarely, my sister and I decided that they had no genitals. One day, preparing a shower for my sister's second marriage, I caught them necking behind the hors d'oeuvres. Without knowing why, I was filled with a terrible foreboding. And sure enough, exactly 8 days later, the stock market crashed. For years, my father had been ashamed of his face, the large nose, the eyes which he decided were too soft. Not wanting to feel uncomfortable, he chose for his friends only men he felt were uglier than himself. He would invite them over for a few drinks to work up their courage, and then they'd decide to go into town, though they never did it without covering their faces. When it came time for me to marry, I found Sheila, a woman who looked just like my mother, which pleased my analyst, though he wouldn't say why. Because I never had time to develop a personality, I picked one up from whoever was around, and most of the time, that meant Sheila. I became a reflection of her, but watered down a little, and she never forgave me for that. She was always trying to start arguments, but it was difficult because as each day passed, our resemblance grew until we seemed exactly alike. We had become mirrors for one another. Soon Sheila lived only to escape me, which was never difficult. I was dull, she said, insipid, uninspired, and vain. In short, I was just like her, and this realization made her run more quickly than ever into the arms of our neighbors. When I looked at her, all I could see was the large getaway car of the handsome man who lived next door, so I knew it wouldn't be long now. Even those few nights we spent together, I felt lonely, and her size 12 shoes, which had filled me with such happiness when we met, were now only a reminder of shoes I would never fill and the footprints she would leave behind. On the day Sheila left me, the beautiful house we'd spent the best years of our lives in together collapsed and was washed away to sea. That's when I knew it was really over. I would have to begin my life again. I would have to find a way to begin a new life carved out of disappointment and heartbreak. I resolved to reinvent myself. I would embrace my fate and become a new man. One day, still looking for work, I answered an ad in the local paper. While the exact nature of employment was unclear, the interview process lasted almost a week. They were very careful about who they took on, and when Monday came and they called to say I got the job, I understood why. I was to become part of a smooth, well-functioning team. We each had our place, each depending on one another to perform our small tasks, though once we were all together, there was no job too large for us. We were the universe, reduced to overalls and paint. We were harmony and balance, a perfect unity. At last, I thought, my childhood was over, and I was filled with sadness. The sadness you feel when you finally get what you really want.